Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to a December 12, 2008 segment from the Kentucky Water Fuel Museum. Today our guest is Alex Sardo of Hydroxy Technologies. And let's see if Alex isn't with us now. Alex, are you there?
Yes, good morning.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, perhaps you can help to acquaint our listening audience with Hydroxy Technologies and how it is that you became involved in hydrogen from water technology. First of all, where is Hydroxy Technologies headquartered?
We are located in Houston, Texas.
Very good. Okay. And Houston also is somewhat of a fossil fuel capital of the United States, isn't it?
Yes, ironically, yes.
That's pretty funny. Now, you told me yesterday that it was your son who initially introduced you to an article about Stan Meyer, perhaps.
Yes, about, 5 years ago or 4 years ago? I don't remember. It's a very long time ago. He came on one day, and my son he's now 24. But, of course, he was in his, just past his teens then. And he came on, and he was all excited about this new hydrogen technology and how it could replace gasoline altogether. Of course, it was very early stages, so the expectation was very high. He was the one pretty much that introduced me to the alternative fuel possibilities. And as inquisitive as I usually am, I started, of course, researching on the Internet and everything I could find about this. And the more that I dug through it, and the more it became obvious that this technology, you know, was always there. It's just a matter of fact of being exposed to it.
Okay. Now, you were already in business at the time?
Yes, I've been in business. My background, if I can go into that quickly, my background is engineering. I began at the age of 14 writing a few software programs and assembling my first Z80-based computer at the age of 18. Back then, the only computer you could have would be the one you plug in your TV set. My first computer was a Sinclair ZX81. I began at a very early age of, working with electronics and software.
Which has apparently proved to be useful because you're one of the first companies to offer a device that interfaces with a laptop or a regular
computer. You're referring, I would guess, to the VMU product that we introduced to the market in January 2008. That product spun from all the research that we did a few years back, making it obvious that it doesn't really matter what kind of fuel you introduce to a vehicle, which was designed in this case to run gasoline, for example. You always have to compensate for the different conditions. We basically began the same way that everybody pretty much begins with a standard O2 offset controllers, AFEs, or things like that. And we quickly realized how smart and complex the ECU, the engine control units, installed in modern cars really are. I'm not going to go into the complexity of it, but just if you just think about the concept of a vehicle, when you purchase a vehicle, it doesn't matter where you live, if you live in the mountains, if you live down the sea, if you live in a different country, you don't buy a different model for the location where you live. So there must be some intelligence in the vehicle which learns about the environment, pressure.
Yes, and when we use that word intelligence, we're being very generous because as we try to introduce a smarter fuel, we find that the intelligence of the ECU proves to be quite, it gives us a lot of consternation.
It does. EFAS vehicles are probably the hardest to interface with when we talk about hydrogen injection and things like that, or even water injection. It doesn't really matter. They're the hardest to interface to because it doesn't matter what you do. The computers that the cars are managed by are designed to ensure that ultimately you will get the mass per gallon that the manufacturer pre-programmed into it. So it doesn't matter what you do, your savings, for example, when you introduce hydrogen or water injection or things like that, are temporary. Normally they last between 3 to 5 days. And that's why you hear all the time people saying, well, I got this great system and I installed it and it worked fantastic. I had 60% savings. But then the next week it didn't work anymore. So I think I burned something or something is wrong. And reality is nothing is wrong. It's just the car learned.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the original setting.
So the default setting in a modern vehicle is to waste fuel.
Well, the most safe, it is to waste fuel, of course. I mean, there is a lot to it. I'm not going to go into the conspiracy theory, all those kind of things. But it is the default settings has been designed by the manufacturer to make sure that the vehicle always runs at the preset miles per gallon consumption, whatever. So, excuse me. Let me just say one thing. How can it be that in the past 3 months, every ad on television is for a vehicle that yields approximately 30 to 36 miles per gallon? So you can't tell me that suddenly humanity became smarter in the last 3 months and they figured out a way to save gas.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And the vehicles are the same models.
Yeah, this is something that my son, I have a son who's in his 20s, and he commented on that. As we were driving down the road together, he said, did you notice that the same vehicles that were previously getting fewer miles per gallon, now they have on the windshield in these car dealerships that they're getting over 30 miles per gallon.
Of course.
And he said, what do you think's accounting for that change?
and it's amazing. What's amazing, the most amazing part of it is that people don't question it. I'm not talking about people like ourselves and other companies similar out there that produce similar products that we do. I'm not talking about the technical people, the one that increases more, you know, whatever is not normal. But I'm talking about the general public. Don't question.
They're asleep.
They accept it.
Yeah. Okay, so what we're talking about, for those who are still asleep and don't even follow where we're going with this, what you're implying is that the same vehicle that was getting 25 miles per gallon a few months ago, by reprogramming or having it come off the assembly line with a reprogrammed ECU, that same vehicle is now getting over 30 miles per gallon.
That is correct.
And they did no changes to the engine. The physical aspect of the engine was not changed, just the programming.
That is correct. The same models, the same liters engines. The only change is the way then the engine is the ECU is programmed.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, and I'm not defending the car manufacturers. I'm sure there are reasons why they do. See, the main reason why the engines are programmed the way they are because they have to design a vehicle that works for most people.
Right.
So they look at the majority of population, where they drive, what they do with the car, and they put a parameter in the ECU that says, well, you know what? Yeah, we are wasting fuel, but it works everywhere. So that's what they're interested in sales. And I'm sure there are some underlying reasons underneath, but I'm not going to go into that.
Yes. Well, another thing is that the average person is interested in power as well as economy.
Of course.
And so one of the things that they set the parameters for is for someone who wants acceleration and so on.
Yeah. I mean, so going back to the original question is about the VMU. What we did is we analyzed as many parameters as we could without infringing any copyright laws on the ECU, and we designed a product that, let's say, fools the ECU in thinking everything is normal. What we do is we intercept signals on the current version 2 of the VMUs, which is the second generation VMU. We intercept the signals coming from, of course, the O2 sensors, the MAP sensors, and we monitor temperatures and things like that. And we order these signals in a way that anything that we introduce to the vehicle does not affect the way the ECU was designed for. So when we introduce a new gas, for example, let's talk about hydroxy, which is a combination of hydrogen and oxygen. Of course, the O2 sensor is going to see more oxygen. Everyone knows that. And then the ECU would see more oxygen. And as soon as the ECU sees more oxygen, then, of course, it would try to compensate by putting more gas. And so it's a very chain reaction. So what we do is we intercept those signals and readjust them so that the ECU does not think something has changed and it needs to compensate by adding more fuel. Without a VMU or without a computer-controlled device that manages those sensors, any effect gained by a booster or by a fuel injector system or things like that will be temporary. So
although
that's
there
why
are some,
so important.
there are some vehicles, it seems, that will accept the boosting without the need of such an intercept.
True, that is very true. There are two classes of vehicles. We have the vehicles pre-1998, or basically vehicles which do not have an ECU. We talk about older vehicles. And, of course, diesel vehicles. Diesel vehicles are not affected as badly as EFI vehicles. And, of course, in those cases, you would not need a computer to manage the sensors. However, as soon as you put a booster into a vehicle, the first thing you're going to find out is that the booster generates heat, and heat is not really your friend. When a booster overheats, its contents is going to go into the engine eventually, unless you can manage that heat. And as you know, or as many people would know, when you heat a solution, it takes less current through electrolysis to produce the same amount of gas with a hot solution than it takes for a cold solution.
So you do want some heat then?
Well, you want some heat, but what you want to do, you want to keep the heat constant and adjust the current requirement for that solution so that as hotter the solution gets, the less current, for example, you drive it with. And this is one of the other features that the VMU, of course, takes care of.
And, of course, when we speak of the VMU, this is your company's name for a vehicle management unit.
That is correct.
And this is something that's about the size of a maybe a small radio or something?
Yes, it's a small box. It's about 7 by 3 inches or so, 6 by 3 inches.
And it has a screen, a video screen.
It has an NTSC and PAL output. The reason we went with this current design, this is a second generation VMU. The original VMU, which was introduced to the market in January, used to use a touch screen. And there were some issues with touch screens, such as supplies and things like that. So we opted to make sure that we can continue to develop the technology without relying on one manufacturer for any parts. So we designed this second generation VMU with an NTSC or PAL output so that it could be connected to any screen. And we secured at the moment a large amount of these particular LCD screens, which are the 2.5 inches. Should they stop being produced, we can go to any screen out there or to a TV set if you really want to have a very big screen in your car to actually see the way the VMU works.
And then for those who didn't follow you, if you already have a TV screen in your car, this can be interconnected to it.
That is correct. It goes into the entertainment system for the audio and video.
Okay. And so this is a device that can mount on the dashboard, under the dashboard.
Probably
somewhere
under
where the
dashboard, yeah.
Yeah, where the driver can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it basically gives a report of many different under-the-hood activities, right?
That is true. It gives you a report over the key sensors and if you have an OBD2 version, which is an onboard diagnostic version, it allows you to see things like your RPMs and coolant temperature and things like that. On the onboard diagnostic version, the OBD2 version, the good thing about using those kind of the VMU unit is that we use RPM, which is the engine speed, to manage the hydroxy output. And the reason we do that is because everyone reported in the last year or so, reported great savings on highway. We talk about 60%, and this is not inflated figures. My wife can report me 65%, and people that don't know enough about the technology reports around 60% on highways. But all of them have one thing in common. When they go down to the city, they lose most of the savings. So they go down to maybe 5, 10%. And there are various reasons why that happens. One of them is that when you are in the city where you start and stop your vehicle, your hydroxy output is normally constant. So you always get, let's say, for example, say 1 liter per minute hydroxy output into your engine. So even if your engine is only running at 1,000 RPM, it still gets the same amount of hydroxy that if it was running at 3,000 RPM. And what happens is you end up injecting, again, more hydroxy at low RPMs, which the engine compensates by adding more gasoline.
So you're saying that, for instance, a liter per minute, just using that figure, is too much for an idling engine or an engine
that's exactly
close
right.
to idle.
Sure, and there are also other issues. I mean, when you stop at the traffic light, you're pumping all, let's say if I stop at the traffic light for about 30 seconds, you're pumping all this hydrogen into your vehicle at a very low RPM. Although the RPMs are low, what the computer is going to try to do is going to try to inject more gas in it, and then your catalytic converter is going to burn that gas. So although you might be having a savings during the city, when you stop a traffic light or when you start and stop, you lose those savings. And that is why the proportional adjustment on the OBD2 version is very important.
Yes. Okay, so is this similar to then what others are calling a throttle position sensor adjusted output?
Well, no, really. And that's another thing. I mean, this industry, okay, let's just quickly go to what we understand about the industry, is that the industry has been created by people that were tired of paying high prices of gas and high gas prices. And these are people who are hobbyists. So they began as hobbyists. Some of them are engineers. Some of them are just the people that have a garage that wants to mess around with things, okay, just to go to the basics. And what happened is sometimes the people don't understand how vehicles really work. When we talk about throttle position, that's very irrelevant because in an automatic vehicle, when you accelerate, let's say you accelerate and you push the throttle down for about 1 inch, depending on which gear you're in, your RPMs will be different. So it's not proportional. So attaching something to a throttle position, it doesn't give you anything. It doesn't mean anything.
Because you're saying that engine RPM is a better gauge of how much hydroxy needs to be produced,
right,
than the
engine
throttle
RPM
position.
Is pretty much how much combustion is happening. Throttle position is very irrelevant. So.
Well, you may not say that it's irrelevant, but you may say that it's less of a true picture of what the engine needs, huh?
Well, I guess so. But, I mean, yes. I mean, we looked at that. I mean, those figures are available, and their connections are available, and people put a little analog potentiometers through the throttle position. But again, you know, if you run a vehicle which is an automatic vehicle or even a manual vehicle, depending on the gear you're in, the throttle position is not a true, accurate reading for the amount of hydroxy the engine needs.
Okay. So let's discuss some of the things that are accomplished by the VMU. And again, the price of the VMU is shown on your website at $497,
right,
although it is sold as part of a kit along with a cell and a bubbler and all the necessary wires and hoses and so on.
Sure.
But your website shows that a person can buy the VMU for $497 and use it with just about any booster.
Right. That is correct. Now, there are two type of, markets. We originally introduced the VMU as part of a kit. Actually, to go back one step further, we originally introduced a fuel cell, which we designed last year. And after the fuel cell was introduced, we developed a way of managing it, and we designed the VMU. And then, of course, naturally, the end product was a kit. People can buy the VMU separately to use with their own booster, and it works with pretty much any booster because the parameters are configurable. Or they can buy with a kit for different engine sizes. We are just about to endeavor in a 800-truck installation. We're talking about semi-trucks. These are very, very fuel-hungry vehicles. And that will bring a lot of new knowledge to a lot of people out there where don't have the access to such a large fleet regarding using VMUs on the diesel vehicles. I want to talk a little bit about the VMUs and where it is at the moment and what our goal is, if I can.
Sure.
At the moment, VMU, we start seeing on the market people following the steps of our development, and that's fantastic because ultimately, you know, we want the technology to be out there. At the moment, the VMU, or the concept of the VMU, is a device that connects to your car, and you have a nice, pretty color LCD or any LCD that gives you a lot of information. And that is all great. It's great for people like ourselves or technical people that like to see a lot of information, or hobbyists. The reality is, on my wife's vehicle and on many of other vehicles that we installed, our family vehicles, they are scared to use it. They don't want to see a screen. They don't want to see all these numbers and things that scares them. So we installed the VMU without a screen. Now, that prompted the development of a third-generation VMU, which will be available towards the third quarter next year. And this third-generation VMU does not use an LCD. You have an option to connect one, and you can look at it, whatever, but it's not required. And then you might say, okay, if that's the case, then how do people adjust the settings? And that's one of the breakthroughs that we went through, is that you don't have to adjust any settings anymore. We interface to the ECU directly, and the VMU, artificial intelligence software, learns about the conditions about your vehicle before you start your booster, and then after you install your booster, and it adjusts all the parameters automatically. That VMU Series 3, which is undergoing patenting at the moment, that will be the first computer that requires no user adjustment and a true product that you can buy off the shelf and install it yourself.
Oh, that's excellent. And basically what you're saying is that you've developed a device that is like that rare breed of mechanic who's capable of reprogramming the ECU, and it does it for you as if you had one of those highly skilled technicians working on your car.
Right. And it doesn't physically do a permanent programming of the ECU, but it talks and interacts with the ECU. I mean, there are certain legalities you have to be careful when you start interfacing to an ECU into a vehicle. So we know about these legalities, and we make sure that we are within the borderline, still delivering the savings, but not infringing any copyrights or any legalities.
And you're referring primarily to EPA regulations about tampering with...
EPAs, of course, but also there are some copyrights and some laws which change from state to state, which forbids you from altering a vehicle in any way. So you can install aftermarket devices. We all know about that Magnuson-Moss Act and all those kind of things. But there's a fine line. And if people want to go down this route, I suggest that they find out what the laws are in their states before they start, you know, selling products in mass markets. So.
Right, but you're saying that your product will comply with the U.S. State-by-state changes regarding the addition of such a device.
That's correct. And, I'm not going to go into the legalities once again, but, yes, there are constraints, and you have to make sure that when you produce a market, when you produce a product, especially for government installation, things like that, they must be compliant. So the VMU Series 3 will address all those issues, and the VMU Series 2 still in a stage where it can be used on vehicle and fleets, for the simple fact that we can unplug one wire on the VMU itself and all the sensors in your car reverse to normal stock settings. So, and that's another safety feature, of course.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're saying then is that the VMU is going to be plugging into the ECU of the car at the port under the dash, or?
No, it will plug between the connector that goes to the ECU and your vehicle.
So you'll have an interface connector?
Yes, we'll have different interface connectors for different car manufacturers, and we start, of course, from the common vehicles, and we go down the track that way.
Yeah, how many different connectors are there? Is there like 100, or is there only a couple dozen? Or?
Well, the initial estimate that we look is that there are hundreds. There are into the hundreds, but at the same time, we have only maybe about 30 vehicles, which are the most common that you see around the United States, but it is definitely a market that needs to be developed further. The connectors are available. It's just a matter of fact of finding where they are. And that would be the only really delay in the propagation of the product. But by interfacing at that location in the vehicle, we have complete control over everything. The VMU Series 3 uses real-time digital signal resampling. And what that means is, we can sample the signal that goes through the fuel injectors and lower the amplitude of the signals. We can disconnect some of the fuel injectors at a particular speed. And let's say you have a vehicle which runs on 8 cylinders. We can disconnect 2 cylinders after you are higher than 30 RPMs, 30 miles per miles an hour, and make you run on 6 cylinders.
So you're going far beyond just injecting hydroxy and adjusting
sure.
the fuel injection system to that.
Yes.
And really, as you're saying earlier, this is something that apparently the automakers have been capable of doing all along, but they had a target miles per gallon, for each vehicle that came off the line, and the public was satisfied with 22 miles per gallon or whatever, 15
right.
out of an SUV or whatever.
Yes.
And even though they were capable of giving the public higher miles per gallon, they had the brilliant technicians who came up with these systems and who were
right.
capable of stretching the efficiency beyond what we commonly accepted,
right.
But they didn't.
Right.
And
exactly
and now
right.
companies like yours are doing it.
Right. And I'm sure there will be a line that we will have to cross sooner or later when this will be a confrontation. But the bottom line is there are two ways the car manufacturer can sell vehicles. And I traveled to California a few weeks ago, and I looked at the news programs there. They have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vehicles and parking lots full with cars that no one can buy because the cost of the economy is an issue, but the cost of gas is a very big vehicle. We're talking about Humvees, we're talking about H1s and things like that. I mean, these are just big vehicles that are very, very fuel hungry. So the only way they can sell these vehicles is either they lower the price of the vehicle or they increase the mileage. And that's why we start seeing all these great mileage semis vehicles out there. I mean, we're talking about 30, 36 miles per gallon, which is great considering some of the trucks that you buy today, like F-150 and things like that, they're about 13 miles per gallon. So it is. I mean, this is not new. If we are able to produce what we are doing, and we are a company that's been in business for all up, I think we are about 7 years old, I'm sure then the car manufacturer can do the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The question is, even as they're talking about their bailout and so on, this kind of talk I don't think is present. They're not on this page as they ask for billions of dollars to bail them out of their mess.
Of course. But what we will see in the next years, and this is a prediction for the next few years, we will start seeing vehicles which are manufactured with, first of all, better fuel consumption, because this low, I mean, we're talking about the price of gas, price of gasoline. I mean, 2 months ago, we used to pay here in Texas $4 a gallon, almost $4 a gallon, and now we're paying $1.70. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, you're telling me that, what, we just found a hole somewhere with plenty of gasoline? I mean, somewhere was there, we just no one saw it?
It's absurd, isn't it?
Of course, and I'm sure that there are reasons, and I'm sure maybe there might even be right reason or valid reason, but the bottom line is it is a manipulation of some sort, and this, if it is true, what we've been told the past few years, that our resources are running low, then this economy, and the price of the gasoline is temporary. I mean, it will change if we go back up, and then people will be in the same position than they were, you know, 3-4 months ago. And they will have forgotten about the 30 miles per gallon vehicles. And you will see them that if you look now at the latest ads on the television or TV sets, and you find that they're not as many 30 or 36 miles per gallon. Now they're just promoting, you know, a better car, the faster car, the luxury car. So, and you will see the ads changing back to the regional marketing. So as a
isn't it absurd how quickly the public forgets?
Oh, exactly right. And exactly
our attention span is, as they say, about the length of a soundbite.
Yeah. I mean,
but this totally ignores the main issue, which should be at the forefront of everyone's attention, and that is the stupidity of burning a fuel to get around anyway.
Of course.
We shouldn't be burning a toxic...
You know, you should not have to have a catalytic converter in your vehicle, because if you look what a catalytic converter does, it burns unburned fuel. So if you think about that, in itself, it's stupid.
Well, it's a combination of we're addicted to petroleum, and the pusher wants us to use as much of that drug as possible.
Yeah, you know, instead of designing a vehicle that uses less so we don't waste as much, they give you a device which burns whatever you don't burn, so you still use the same.
Yeah. So you're addicted, and we want you to spill some along the way.
Right. That's exactly right. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's tied to economy. I mean, that's a big subject, which I'm sure we don't have the time to go through now, but it's tied to economy. And we might think a simple thing like, you know, well, why don't we just remove the catalytic converter and rewrite some of the gases back into the carburetor, like some of the designs which are there today, and do those kind of things, because that would change economy. It would truly change economy. So
yeah, well, for one thing, it would put the catalytic converter people out of business.
But no, just that, it's a very deep subject. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk more about the VMU, because really we've only scratched the surface. It does much more than just interface with the vehicle's ECU. It also, for instance, acts as a pulse width modulator for the hydroxy cell.
Sure. The VMU product is a two component product. We have the computer itself, The computer runs with two microprocessors. We have a microprocessor which is dedicated for the sensors in your vehicle, and we have another microprocessor which is an 8-core microprocessor with a lot of computing power and graphic capability, which is used for the user interfacing. It's also used as a watchdog. A watchdog is a, in this instance, is a device that manages a bus or another electronic device, and whenever something happens to the second monitored device, it would reset it, for example. Like we have two, in our instance, we have two microprocessors that look after each other. If one of them would develop a fault, the other microprocessor would reset the device transparently. You would not see any difference on your monitor or on your car performance. And this was really important for us for reliability. So we wanted to have that. We use the 8-core CPU because we want to have the power to do real-time sampling in preparation for the Series 3 release. So that's the hardware design of pretty much of the computer itself. We then have a power module which sits in your vehicle, in the engine compartment, or just in front of the engine compartment, which contains what we call the pulse width modulator power circuit. We use a very, maybe it's not an overkill, but we went with abundant specification into the power width power module, so that we will not have instances where, you know, it burns out, for example, while you're driving. So, for example, we'll be using 240 amps rated transistors. We have a parallel circuit that is designed that way. Although the boxes we sell, we only rate them for 30 amps. And the reason we do that is because we want to have redundancy. We want to make sure that if you do run a cell in your vehicle, there is room for things that could go wrong and things like that. So, so we have a pulse width modulator which manages your cells. We have, of course, all the sensors interfacing. We have various temperature sensors that monitors the temperature of the box itself or the fuel cell and acts accordingly. We have safety in the VMU that would cut off the production of hydroxy if, for example, the fuel cell goes over temperature, if the box goes over temperature, if your engine is not running. We monitor the oil sensor in your engine for the pressure.
So, for instance, if a person had an accident,
exactly right. If
you have an accident, shut the system down.
They will shut down completely. If you sit in your car with your key turned on, listening to the radio, but the engine is not running, we don't produce any hydroxy. And all those kind of things. We have about 6 or 7 safety features. Some of them are mechanical. Some of them are electronic. Safety. If people that know me know that I'm very paranoid when it comes to safety. Especially, you know, I would never install a system which is not 100% safe in a vehicle where I, you know, take my kids to school, for example.
Yes, so, and perhaps that could lead us into the next thing that I wanted to mention, and that is that you're in favor of a standard, a safety standard for hydroxy equipment.
Yes, without receiving a bunch of hate mails after we hang up this conversation, my concern, everything that I've learned, or everything that we learned in the past 2 years, let's say, in this industry is that there are various levels of development. And we have the people that design fuel cells using a glass jar with a metal wire, selling a lot of them on eBay and other places for a quick, let's say, $40, and gaining a lot of exposure and a lot of sales, but at the same time ruining the concept of, I don't know the right word, but basically I use the word poisoning the market. What I mean with that is that there are people that design systems without understanding the requirements for such devices, and sell them to people out there that after they've installed in the vehicles, you know, things like, you know, blowing up jars and broken leads and escaping gases are what you normally find in user groups and things like that. So what we did about 6 months ago now, we went through a process of trying to figure out how can we have a product out there which uses some sort of standards or some sort of approval, where we are in a market that there doesn't have such approval. There is no
something
such
like
thing
a UL listing or something, huh?
Right, but that's right. We start researching that, and there is no such UL listing for an hydroxy booster. It doesn't exist. So we set some guidelines based on the safety requirements or safety parameters that we believe that should be within with every fuel cell that you installed in a vehicle. This parameter has nothing to do with how much hydroxy can produce. It's only to do with the safety itself. So we have submitted our product for. When you manufacture something overseas, there is a requirement for every factory overseas to produce approved devices. So we submitted our boosters for approval overseas in Hong Kong, and they're still going under testing. But we have SGS, which is a large compliance company, running tests on different environments. We introduced an approved backfire arrester. These are not your bronze, wool, and stainless steel screens arrester. These are proper arrester designed to let only small particles of hydroxy go on through. We, of course, upgraded all the fittings and hoses, which are all UL approved. All the wiring is approved and things like that. So at this stage, we are trying to set a baseline for future developers where they can have a product and be proud of saying, this is approved, it approves this standard, and it's got these safety features, and you can actually take it, install it, and know that nothing's going to happen in your way.
Yeah, so there are certain minimum standards for
right.
safety then. Now, there already is a panel or a group that has was sort of self-appointed. It was a mutual appointment of a board that that hopes to serve as a board strictly dedicated to examining and approving devices that meet their standards. And this group came together at the HHO Games and Exposition in the Tampa area, south of Tampa, Florida, Manatee County, in November. There was a 4-day event held there. And I think some of your devices end up being represented there. Is that not right? There were some people that brought your devices to the show.
Sure. Yes, we have some of our customers actually were at the show with the device installed.
Okay, so there was a number of people who took it upon themselves to form an approval board, and it seems that they haven't really done anything, as far as I know. There's no public release of information as of yet, but supposedly they're working on achieving something inside the industry, as opposed to the approval that you're getting is from an outside approval agency, right?
Right. We're talking about two different levels. We're talking about a group of people which are a level higher than the average hobbyist, wanting to clear the smog and get rid of the mayonnaise jars you buy on eBay.
Exactly.
We are exactly on the same track when it comes to that. The difference between our thinking and the approval board that is forming at this time here in the United States is we think globally. We have one thing probably we haven't mentioned as yet is we have an international company in Hong Kong which manages global distribution. And the local board that is forming at the moment with these basic standards will definitely help. But ultimately, if you don't have a global standard, then you're going to have units going somewhere else, doing the same damage that has done to the market here in the United States.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So,
well, I think it's all necessary. And
sure.
If there were something like a Consumer Reports just for hydrogen booster equipment,
yes.
You know.
Yes, and I'm sure all this is going to happen. We 2009 is going to be an exciting year for the technology. I think we are now to a stage where with the help of people like people that designed the Smart Booster, and I'm sorry, but his name escapes me right
Dustin,
now.
Dustin, yeah, uh-huh. Electric.
Which I have a total 100% respect for. I mean, that person is to me, you know, when I started learning about everything, to me, he was like an idol. I still have great respect for the person, but people like him are now to a stage where they overcome the initial development, and they have a product that works for the market that was intended for. And there are a lot of companies and people like that starting up now that have started in 2008 producing our products, which are consistent to the specification that they disclosed to begin with. And 2009 is going to be really an exciting year, because you will see the weeding out of the mayonnaise jars. You will see the weeding out and retraining of installers. They don't understand how to install. They just want to make the quick dollars, and they're hurting because of the Financial Times. So we have a new certification program starting in early 2009, where we have to certify every single installer that installs our product. That is not a buzzword, because we like to say the word certified. It is a requirement, since we intend to go through certification for the company worldwide. So we cannot be certified ourselves unless we have certified installers. So,
well, I think that's excellent. You're definitely setting the right example for the rest of the industry in having a more global, viewpoint toward the establishment of the technology. I noticed you have branches all over the world. You have distributors throughout the U.S., but you also have distributors represented in many countries around the world.
Yes, and next year we will see a consolidation of all our dealers in the United States, going through maybe one or two distributors. And this is purely because of logistics. Nothing's going to change the way the dealers are treated. If anything, they'll get some more attention. But we don't have the capabilities of managing every shop out there. We are a developing company, and we appointed a national distributor, which there'll be a press release on the website in the next few days. And ultimately, we just want to have one or two distributors per country, and that's the path that we're going through.
And lest anyone think that all you're making is the VMU, we need to mention that your product line is complete. You have the cells, the flashback arrestor, and the accessories to get it all in one kit.
Yes, one of the very exciting development for us, for me personally also this year, was we managed to get in contact with a manufacturer in Hong Kong, which is a factory in China. And that allowed us to spend 2 months approximately through a design phase to bring us to a level of production which is unsurpassed. I mean, we have the capabilities today to produce fuel cells of 600 units per day. That's 12,000 units a month production. 2009, you will see the prices of a fuel cell dropping proportionally from the beginning of the year towards June. Our goal is to produce a fuel cell that is around the $120-$130, which will basically open the doors to all these people that always wanted to try but never had the financial possibility to do so.
Right.
We honestly are going to be the largest manufacturers of fuel cells worldwide. We have the system already in place.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm looking over your website. I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, we have stock right now. We don't have any back orders on fuel cells. We're still optimizing the electronic production. We have two companies doing the assemblies. Next year, we're going to go to a much larger company. But you have to understand that we are also growing. I mean, we went down the track of, like many people, to starting from a first fuel cell and a first YouTube video to a level where we can't afford that anymore. We need to be able to have a production rate and to cover the market now more than ever, because if we don't, then the only thing you're going to see is mayonnaise jars. So we want to produce a product which is affordable, reliable, and with a proven, consistent hydroxy output.
Sure.
There are some new designs coming out again next year. We have, and I'd like to introduce quickly just a few words for one of the new cells. We have a fuel cell which is going to be released around February, towards the end of February, and this fuel cell generates hydrogen and oxygen separately. That's another breakthrough for us. There's been many designs. It's not something that we invented. It's something, once again, that we learn and we perfection to our standards. But this will allow you to control the amount of oxygen and the amount of hydrogen that you inject into a vehicle. And for that matter, you can just inject just pure hydrogen, getting away from the issues of O2 management and things like that.
But so it is possible to avoid that issue altogether by
exactly.
by off-gassing the oxygen.
Right. Sure. And there are, you know, there are people out there who say, well, you know, hydrogen and oxygen burns better, and this is true, but there is a balance. But we'll see that next year.
Yeah, very interesting. And, of course, the very first hydrogen booster that was patented in 1918 shows that capability. The electrodes
right.
are on separate sides of two sides of the chamber, and there's a divider wall that allows the gases to be controlled separately.
Yes, it's a PEM membrane or a special membrane, which allows water particles to go through, but it keeps the gases out.
Yeah, I think one of the old patents says that a piece of asbestos will work.
Oh, I'm sure there are different materials, asbestos, fiberglass, porous rubber. I mean, there is an enormous amount of materials out there. You just have to you have to design the system so it's something that can be manufactured in large quantity reliably and produce consistent results. It's very easy to put together something like that on a one or two scales. But when you're talking about producing, you know, hundreds and thousands, then you have to have a design that is, you know, then I don't know the
yeah.
word, but maybe the monkeys can put it together. Put it this way. It has to be something that is a reliable product with an easy assembly concept.
Well, why don't we mention your website then so that people can see what your current product line is. It's very attractive, well put together, very professional. Your website is www.
It's hydroxycorp.com.
Hydroxycorp.
Corp.
C-O-R-P dot
yes.
com.
Yes.
Okay.
And we have the international website being worked at the moment. It'll be launched next year. But the hydroxycorp.com is the main website. And again, our prices at the moment are probably on the higher end that in the industry itself, and there is a reason for it. There is a cost development that we have to recover. And there's also some of the components are still locally manufactured, and the quantity of purchasing power that we have locally is not as high as it would like it to be. But you will see next year all those prices coming down to a more affordable level. We don't believe in it. We would rather sell a large amount of products to cover the most clientele out there at a fair price than selling two products at a very high price. So our goal is to make sure technology gets out there and introduce public to another way of powering a vehicle. If I can also say one last thing, next year we have... we're setting up a conference, a national conference, where we will invite not only our distributors and dealers, but the general public. And we will, at that time, disclose the plans for 2009, and we'll have an engine running on just hydroxy fuel cells.
Well, that's great. There
so
seem to be several of such projects.
It won't
projects
be a vehicle,
work.
It'll be a small engine, but it will prove the concept, and people will be able to see it.
That's wonderful. We'll look forward to hearing more from your company along all of these lines, and especially that. But it's been nice having you, and I hope that your goals of onward and upward prove to be, something that can be fulfilled in the coming months. Perhaps we can do a follow-up interview and
sure.
and see how things are going, because you mentioned several press releases you're going to be having just over the next
yes.
the next couple months. So we'll look forward to hearing more about how things have gone.
Okay. Well, thank you, and I appreciate the opportunity to have this interview.
Well, I think it's great to see a company such as yours doing what you're doing. It's very encouraging.
Okay. Well, that's been great.
Okay. Well, let's do it again in the near future and bring people up to speed with what's happening.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Goodbye.